Hi everybody, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's great to have you here with us. It's a day before we leave for Ireland. It's a really interesting situation also because Brendan Sweeney, who the GNN radio contributor, my friend from French Lick Resort, one of my better friends in life, he is in an interesting spot because the tropical storm slash hurricane Idalia that is going to be hitting seemingly the west coast of Florida tonight or tomorrow is going to potentially impact his travel plan. So trying to figure out how to get him over to Dublin, whether that's coming up here toward the DC area and then flying over together or leaving early or what that looks like. So hopefully not too long after we record this, there's a resolution to that and we get over there just fine. But so excited to be getting over there with Club Choice Ireland. Tiernan Byrne is going to be our, not chauffeur, but Sherpa, but also chauffeur for at least a few days. And then we're on our own for the back half of the trip, which is going to be pretty wild because I've never driven on the left side of the road, and I don't know if Brendan has either. So that'll be a little bit of a journey. If you have any tips about driving on the left side of the road, that'd be helpful. Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, Ryan Ballingy on Twitter /X. Threads, Instagram, all those things. So I would happily take some advice about that. But we're going to be leaving tomorrow night. My flight's at 9 p.m. Eastern and get over there. I think it's 8:30 in the a.m. Dublin time. So I explained to my daughter last night what time zone differences really mean. She's seven, and we've never really had to consider that since she's been truly conscious of the world. We go to Tennessee every summer with our family, and that's a one-hour time difference. Like, so small that we don't even really talk about it. I never really brought it up, being in the central time zone. I mean, we've talked about being in the central time zone, but what that actually meant to time, so to speak, is a construct. So I explained to her what the time difference is, which is 5 hours, and that when I would try to get in touch with them while I'm over there, I have to consider that the time here is 5 hours earlier. And she was very surprised by that. But she wasn't picking up while I was putting down until I explained that when I was putting her to bed last night, at 9, that it was 2 in the morning in Dublin. So that was kind of surprising to her, but it's going to be a little surprising to me. The good news is going back is easy. So coming back on the 8th, September 8th, will be pretty simple to get reacclimated. But going there, you got to fight through it. And I remember that from the last time I was over there. You got to fight through right away. You got to stay up as long as you can. You got to last as long as you can. You got to try to get on the right time as best you can. And you just got to kind of make yourself do it. So that'll be the plan for Thursday. We're going to be in Dublin, hanging out in and around the Dublin area, and then we go to our first hotel for a couple of nights, and we start the golf on Friday. So if you're interested in checking up on our trip, seeing pictures and video and all that stuff, I'll be posting it to Twitter, Instagram, all those types of things. So please follow me there if you're interested in checking out the trip as it goes on. And if you're interested in your own trip, check out clubchoiceireland.com. They do great trips in what they are calling the ancient east of the country, which is really kind of the Dublin part of the country, the east coast of the island. And there's so much good golf there. I love Dublin personally. It's one of my favorite cities I've ever been to. So it's going to be great to be back. But check them out at clubchoiceireland.com. Okay, so we've got a couple things to talk about today. We do have a guest. The guest is Cheyenne Knight, and Cheyenne was named yesterday, at least publicly, to the U.S. Solheim Cup team, captained by Stacey Lewis. She found out about it as soon as she finished up with the CPKC, the Canadian Women's Open, last weekend in Vancouver. And so we talked a little bit, about 10, 12 minutes somewhere in there, and we talked about her time becoming a player on this team, what it was like to find out, which he's looking forward to the most, kind of recon on Finca Cortesine, which is the host course, who she might play with, how that all kind of lines up. So we had a good conversation. It was, I'm sure, a crazy day for her. She was on Golf Channel and did a bunch of media. So it was nice to get a little bit of time with her on what was probably one of the most momentous days of her career. She won twice in the LPGA. She won the Volunteers of America shootout. She's won this year with Elizabeth Zokel at the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational. So she won a team event. So there's a lot on her resume that's starting to get a little bit longer. And it was cool to talk to her. 26-year-old kid. I mean, I'm 14 years older than her, so I feel like she's kind of a kid. But she's not. 26-year-old who is coming into her own. And she's going to be on a team that's going to have five total rookies. She's one of them. And Stacey Lewis talked about that a little bit when she named her three captains picks. So Angel Yin and Allie Ewing were the others. Allie Ewing was, I think, first out on points. Cheyenne Knight was 11th in points in the end, but was playing very well. Obviously had won fairly recently. And then was 20th in the Race to the CME Globe points. So pretty high up for an American player. And Angel Yin was first out based on the Rolex rankings players that got in. So she was neck and neck with Rose Zhang, who got onto the team on that basis. Two players will qualify for that. And Lexi Thompson is on the team as well. That's an interesting conundrum. We'll talk about that in a second. But basically, Cheyenne was one of the contenders really all the way through. She had a really great earlier part of the year before she won in July at the Dow. And then kind of got a little off track, but not so far off track that it was awful. It's just maybe not as good as earlier in the year, but she's had a couple of good major finishes this year. Really starting to kind of figure out how to play the majors the last 2 years. So we hopefully we'll enjoy that conversation. Lexi Thompson is a really interesting situation for the American side. She has not been good this year. She's 100-1 to win this week in Portland. The Portland Classic has, by the way, probably its best field in 20 years because I think they're trying to figure out something with a sponsor here, and they have more top 50 players this week at the Portland Classic playing for a $1.5 million purse than they did last week in Vancouver for the CPKC Women's Open, which has a $2.5 million purse. So I think there's an emphasis here to try to get a new sponsor in and maybe do a little impressing. So, but Lexi's taken on a really good field, and she's not had a very good year. I mean, she's consistently missing cuts, not playing good golf. She hasn't played a lot. She looks disinterested when she plays. She's talked about, frankly, taking more time for herself, which, as a human being, I completely agree with. She has spent her entire life, basically, in the public consciousness. I mean, she's played in, what, like 15 or 16 consecutive U.S. Women's Opens. But she's like 27. So she spent so much time in the public golf consciousness that it's probably overwhelming. And she's probably never really had a whole lot of time over the course of the years that she's been on the LPGA, which is a decade basically, that she's been able to just kind of be a person in their youth, if that makes sense. And I think she's finally realized that, maybe wants to see some value in that, and has seen that through this year, but her golf has certainly suffered. And while I'm happy for her as a human being to be able to kind of get to be a human being on this team of 12, I don't know. I mean, she qualified. That's all I can say. She qualified, and that's why she's on it. I don't think she would have gotten a captain's pick otherwise, but she qualified, and here we are. So it'll be interesting to see how Stacey Lewis integrates her, the rookies. Some of the rookies are major champions this year. Lilia Vu's never played on the Solheim Cup. She's a two-time major winner this year. Allison Corpuz, U.S. Women's Open champion. New to this event, but obviously has had an extraordinary year. Contended another major. She's had almost won the Dana Open with a great comeback in the final day. So, you know, you have players who don't have a lot of experience in this particular format, but they have had some pretty darn big experience on the biggest stages the LPGA has this year and have succeeded. I don't know what makes a good team. I I don't know what makes the proper team. And I think, frankly, and I've seen this, other people say this, so this is an original thought, but we do this for both these teams, you know, the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup. I know the Ryder Cup gets more play, but whatever team, whether you're, and we'll throw on the President's Cup for what it's worth, any of these team competitions, Walker Cups this week, you should watch it. It's the old course. Man, it's going to be fun. Saturday and Sunday. It's on Peacock, I believe. But any of these team-type competitions where you have to get 8, 10, 12 people together and figure out how to make them a unit for 2 or 3 days, 4 days, and have them take on another team, we often, I think, agonize over the players who don't qualify automatically and who makes and why and what they can do. And I think at the end of the day, and Zach Johnson is going to make this choice this morning, even though I think it's pretty clear who he's made his choices for, but he's going to make those choices public. And you're going to have Brooks Koepka and Colin Morikawa and Ricky Fowler and probably Justin Thomas, probably Sam Burns. I mean, you're going to have a team of players. Spieth, I think, is part of it. You're going to have a team of players that half qualified, half didn't, and you've got to try to match them up. You've got to match them up for the alternate shot and better ball pairings that you need to make. You need to match them up for total team chemistry. You need to match them up for their golf ability, how they complement each other, how they're different from each other. You need to have some level of experience, I think, but apparently not much, because last time around we had a whole bunch of guys that are fairly new to it and won by 10, you know, what, 19-9. They won by 10 points, record margin. So I think we agonize over these decisions too much for what turns out to be 3 days or 4 days, depending on the competition, 2 days in the Walker Cup, where you go, okay, well, now what? Like, we're going to match these players up and see what happens. But we don't have so much. The whole idea that the Europeans have so much more data and science that makes it make more sense. On paper, perhaps. But as the phrase I like to use, of course, is one-game scenario. In a one-game scenario, which is that 18-hole match, anything can happen. If you played a series where you played the same person 7 times in a row in an 18-hole match play situation or even stroke play, the better player would win, most likely. But in 18 holes, especially at this skill level, where the difference between being the best and the worst on one of these types of teams is not much, it's just kind of, random nature comes into play a whole heck of a lot, and that determines the outcome. Do I think the Americans were that much better than the Europeans in 2021? That's one of the rare times where I would actually tell you yes, at least from top to bottom. But this time around, for both teams, frankly, for the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup on both sides, you have really good players at the top, and then you have some question marks at the bottom. And that doesn't mean that they're bad players. It just means there's something you don't know. There's something you don't feel confident about, whether that's inexperience, whether that's poor form, combination, whatever it is. But there's something there where you're going, I don't know. That is what's going to make this interesting for both of these, which is who performs and is it the people you expect? Because in a lot of times in these types of competitions, it's not who you expect. So that's pretty cool. That's the part I look forward to, is trying to figure out who performs in this random, completely different than usual situation where so many people are pulling for and against you, and the pulling against you part doesn't really happen at any other time in golf. I mean, it might happen between friends or making a bet on a par three or something, but the performance piece of this is really, can you perform when you're called in a random situation? Can you adapt really quickly? Can you be okay with people booing you and being against you? Can you play a format you don't typically play, which is match play? It's all about adapting to variables that you don't really experience day-to-day as a professional golfer. That's why I love the cauldron of these events. So, talk to Cheyenne a little bit later. That'll be the back end of the show, the last 10-12 minutes. of the program. But kind of wanted to preface everything that we found out yesterday from Stacey Lewis, but also found out that we're going to find out from Zach Johnson today, because the picks are pretty much out there. I think I would be surprised if they changed at this point, or there was some element of deception in all of this. Sam Burns is going to make the team. So you pretty much know the list of characters that are going to make it. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Tour Championship. I want to talk about the format. I want to talk about what happened, what it might mean for the gang at CBS and their opportunity to broadcast it for the first time, all the way through at least. I mean, they've had playoff events at times over the years. Sometimes they had the first playoff event. Like in the early years of the playoffs, CBS got what used to be called the Barclays and then the Northern Trust. They had that, and then the rest went to NBC. But with this new television contract that came about, just before COVID, basically. I think it was 2019. But as part of that new deal, whenever that got implemented, I really don't remember anymore. All the years jumble together, which is part of the problem of getting old. But as part of the new contract, NBC and CBS would alternate broadcasting all of the playoffs each year. So NBC had it last year, CBS gets it this year. NBC gets it next year, CBS gets it the following year. And it goes like that for the entire deal. So I think NBC gets one more in that deal. Maybe it's like 5-4 or something like that. But that's how they're going to do it. So CBS is obviously excited to have the playoffs, because in the dog days of August, there's really not much to watch. It's not like CBS has rights to the NBA. Like WNBA, which is on ESPN, does pretty well for this time of year. Little League World Series is on ESPN. They're not airing that. Frankly, that is what it is. It's entertainment, but kind of weird entertainment. So really your only options are like Canadian football, which I love, but that's not on network TV. Big Three basketball, which CBS has the rights to, and they actually air on network TV, which is kind of surprising, but it's something. And then you've got golf. But for basically the last 16, 17 years, they've had one of these events, and then they're locked out. And now this year, they get the chance to show them all. And frankly, they get to do it as the better of the networks that show golf consistently. CBS is just better right now. They have figured it out. Sellers Shy took over the executive producer capacity here and from Lance Barrow, and really instituted some changes that were for the better. He got Colton Ost and Amanda Renner together at a specific hole. They've let Amanda Renner kind of do more stuff to interview players and engage with them. And she has a good rapport with a lot of the players. That's been better. The team gels a little bit better, I think, because they're under less pressure. Trevor Immelman has done a really nice job, I think, being in the 18th tower with Jim Nance. Nance is Nance. Love him or dislike him, whatever, but he has a very strong command in the leaderboard or in the 18th tower of what's going on. He follows the game, loves the game. So he's got a command of, he's just a good broadcaster. You may not like everything he does, but he's a good broadcaster. And I think even some of the other contributors, pieces to it have come together better. Daddy Pepper's been great. I've always loved Frank Nablo. Ian Baker Finch is a really good contributor. He's been part of golf on TV forever. And I think he's found even a little bit of his voice again working with Sellers Shy. So they're the better outfit. And they have really put in the effort to not only having a better set of voices that gel together, but also using technology in a better way than they had under Lance Barrow. Thanks to Fox Sports for pushing that with the USGA, getting more behind, down the line kind of views with TrackMan and Shot Tracer, that type of stuff. They started implementing camera angles or camera views, tape camera views of a player's lie when they get into a bad situation. They've used drones more. sometimes for view, sometimes for scenics, but it's been a better presentation. That all said, I think it was weird for them to broadcast the playoffs because they're used to airing just golf tournaments. You focus on the 72-hole result, right? Whoever wins, and whoever's contending, that's where you spend the time, for better or for worse. And they, during the playoffs, did that with really not as much acknowledgement of what was going on in the FedEx Cup playoffs, which is really what the tour probably wants, just as much, if not more, than the actual tournament, because FedEx is the big sponsor. They also sponsor the Memphis event, but they're the big sponsor. So they pay the big bills, and so they got to get their play. And I figured once I saw how they broadcast Memphis that it was probably going to be like that for the BMW and the Tour Championship, that they acknowledged those scenarios, those cutoff scenarios, and they did it especially better, I think, in being at the BMW in acknowledging that they exist, but showing the ramifications of each shot, they did not do especially well. And then you got to the Tour Championship, and I don't think they talked a whole lot about the starting strokes. And I don't know if that's because they didn't care and didn't want to confuse people. They didn't want to off-put them. They thought about that, or the Tour kind of said, hey, you know, don't worry so much about those starting strokes. Just show the leaderboard. I don't know. But they also were handcuffed a little bit in the Tour Championship because by the time you got to Sunday, first of all, you had a weather delay. It was like 2 hours out of nowhere. Imagine a massive thunderstorm showing up in Atlanta when it's 100 million degrees outside and 100% humidity. But that threw things off. It didn't help to start the day that Victor Hovland was up a handful and almost certainly was going to win. That didn't help. So you're trying to navigate not only the delay, but you're also trying to navigate a route, and a route for the biggest prize the PGA Tour awards financially every year. It's hard to make a blowout exciting. Now, fortunately, they did stumble into a great duel, a duel that proved ultimately meaningless to the end result, but a great duel between Xander Schauffele, Mr. Eastlake, and Victor Hovland. And I mean, the show was wonderful. I mean, if you look at the way they played the final day, Xander went out in 31 and I think gained a shot on Victor Hovland. Victor Hovland shot 63. Xander Schauffele shot 62. That's crazy. That's crazy. The two best rounds of the day, yes, it's a 30-player tournament, but the two best rounds of the day came from the final pairing. That very rarely happens in golf on a weekend, and, well, really any day, but especially the weekend. I thought that made for some entertaining golf. The whole shame was that the format didn't lend itself to excitement in terms of the final result, because as long as Victor Hovland kept pace, he was way ahead, and in the end, won by 5. Started at 8 under. Both players, by the way, were 19 under for the week, which is just decimation of Eastlake, which is going to be renovated. Andrew Green's going to do it. I think I said last week or on a different podcast, I thought it was Gil Hance. It's Andrew Green. And he's going to do a great job. Did a great job at Congressional. He's done so many places. He did Wilmington Country Club for the BMW a few years ago. Turned an RTJ place upside down, made it a little bit better, I think, from the classic architecture that it was. More penal style to still fairly penal, but not as crazy. Or more modernized, I should say. But to shoot 19 under on this golf course, and it was fairly receptive from the start, which is unusual. But to do that on this type of golf course, where driving does matter, where accuracy does matter off the tee, and Bermuda greens are tricky, I think, for everybody, that was pretty remarkable, but that was overshadowed by the fact that you had a starting strokes format where these guys were 5 strokes apart at the beginning. Xander Schauffele was on 3 under to start, and Victor Hovland was on 8 under. And so the immediate reaction probably is, well, darn those starting strokes, we could have had something here. We could have had a playoff for the FedEx Cup. And yes, that's true. If we had not had the starting strokes. But it also would have been just as, it would have been a two-man duel either way, because they were, again, at 19 under 261 for 72 holes. The next best player was Wyndham Clark, seven strokes back, on 12 under 268. So it wasn't particularly exciting for a lot of players. It really was a two-player thing, regardless of the format. Just the starting strokes were at work here. And you want to go, oh, well, you know, maybe we should have a one-game scenario tour championship. And everyone starts at the same number, and that's how it works. But there is, in pretty much every playoff, some kind of inherent advantage to being best. Whether that's home field, you get to go last in, you know, baseball, for example. Having home court, home ice, home field. You don't really get that in the Super Bowl, obviously. That's a neutral site game. But the general feeling is that you get to the final and the better team or the better player gets some kind of advantage, whatever that might be. Now, in tennis, it's the better draw. You get to play weaker players generally all the way through. You don't get that here, right? This isn't a match play kind of thing. So this is the scenario that the tour has come up with to create an advantage. And I think that idea makes sense. As I've said before, I think it should be at the start of the playoffs, not at the end of the playoffs. You should have more time to undo the advantage or work through the advantage or disadvantage that you have to start the playoffs. That's my personal view, because the points don't allow you to do that. And the way that they're structured doesn't allow for a whole lot of movement. Again, that's by design. That's a feature, not a bug. So that there's some things to work out there. But last year in the starting strokes format, you had Rory McIlroy come from, what, six down to catch and pass Scottie Scheffler. And that was exciting and really interesting and in some ways heartbreaking for Scottie Scheffler. But that format worked for that time. And I think that's the gamble of the format is, it's the gamble of golf, by the way, not just this format. If you put 30 players together, and while they are all great players, they're not always great every week. So you might only get, out of 30 players, five that play decent golf, maybe 10, and the other 20 are there to be there. And I think that's the thing that's really weird about the tour championship format. It's just the nature of golf. It's not that these players are not qualified. They're top to bottom, this is a very good field. However, the nature of golf is that's why you have fields of 120, 144, 156. Because out of that number, you're bound to get 10 that play well. You're bound to get 15 that play really well. And then everybody else kind of, you know, jumbled together among the players that make the cut. And a bunch of players play like junk and they don't make the cut. So you get it down to the players that are most interesting. In a tournament like this where 30 players play and you look at the scoring, the worst 72-hole score was 287, 7 over par for Taylor Moore. So there is a 26-stroke spread between the best two players who tied and the worst player. That's a big gap, and you only have 30 of them. It's a little bit different if you have 70, and there's like 25 in the middle. They're just kind of there, and you feel like you can show them. In this, you can't really hide. You can't hide players. You could just choose not to show them, I guess. But you can't hide that they exist. And that's what makes having, you know, 70, 50, 30 really tricky. Because really, you just want to care about like 5 to 10 players. And the other 20. But you got to have other players. You have to have them. Otherwise, you can't get world ranking points. So it all is kind of very strange in that you structurally have to have 30. You know most of them aren't going to have a shot, even before the starting strokes. You take out even more with the starting strokes, and you go from there. So, I don't know what you do to make this different or better. We have this conversation seemingly most years, how to make it better, or what to do differently. And all of that is to say, after 17 years of the FedEx Cup, I don't know that you make it different or better. I don't know what you can do to make it different or better. I mean, I've thrown out tons of ideas over the years. I do like the starting strokes to start the playoffs idea, because then you convert the regular season, and but it gives more time to a player to figure it out. I like that a little bit better, because then the playoffs are playoffs and the regular season influences them instead of just the regular season and two additional events influence them, the Tour Championship. But I don't think there's something that you can do here to make this so grand that everyone would love it and it would get major like ratings. Although the ratings are going to be good. I'm sure they'll be good, even though it's a blowout. But they'll be good, and they attract eyeballs. I mean, the FedEx Cup playoffs have done what they're supposed to do, which is to get people to watch golf in late August, after the majors are done, and there's really nothing else going on until the team competition. And this works. People watch this stuff. I know we talk about this in our silo of golf Twitter or golf social media, etc., and there's a lot of bemoaning and whining and crying and gnashing of teeth. But if you look at the ratings for this over the last 15, 20, you know, we're getting close to 20 years of this, they work. They work. So if it works, you're not going to change it that much, because you got eyeballs and that's what you want. You also got to pay your players. You want that. The players like that too. They like getting paid. You like getting $500,000 just for showing up, for having a pretty good year. I would say a good year is top 30. What's wrong with that? I mean, I see why players like that. So I don't know that you can make it a whole lot different and make it reliably better in terms of competitive drama, in terms of presentation. The starting strokes things, it's easier to understand than points. It just is. So you could make it a 72-hole tournament with no strokes. Would that be ideal? Yeah, I would love that. I think there'd be much more brutal cutoffs if they were just 72-hole tournaments and the top 50 and top 30 from those two tournaments got to the Tour Championship. It'd be really interesting, in my view. But the Tour doesn't want to do that. The players do not want to do that. That's not an option. Stroke play would be really, match play would be very interesting. But we don't play the season as that. So that's not going to happen. So this is the best you could probably do. Accept it, live with it, learn to love it, or don't watch it, whatever. Money's going up next year. I assume it's going to be like $20 or $21 million to the winner. It's going to continue to grow. And probably by the time this contract's over, it'll be $25 million to the winner. Something like that. I don't think money really interests people into watching this. They just want to see the best players compete. And they get that in this format. We're done. Good to go. So are the playoffs a success? I certainly think so. Are they perfect? Absolutely not. Because the idea of playoffs in golf isn't a perfect concept. The sport is not constructed that way. With all the competing priorities that are then funneled into that too. You can't do it. But they're closer. I think they're closer. In the 17th year than they have been. And maybe they'll get even closer still. But, hey, at the end of the day, and I've said this before, we get three really, really, really good golf tournaments in August. I'll take that. It's way better than watching bad golf tournaments, for one, but also just sports in the dog days of August. So there you go. Be happy that you get something good. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this week's guest. Cheyenne Knight is our guest, and I talked to her yesterday, so this is pre-recorded. And she got on with me on a Zoom call after she had just done Golf Channel. And we had a little bit of technical difficulty at the start, but we got it going. And this scenario is interesting to me, and it's always kind of interesting to me to interview people that I don't know, that either I'm meeting for like the first time, the second they get on a phone or a Zoom call, or over email and I, kind of unprompted. because they don't know you and you don't know them. And you're trying to pepper them with questions and make them kind of bring their story out. But at the same time, especially for players like this in this situation, Cheyenne's situation, she was dealing with this all day. And I'm sure from the 11 a.m. embargoed announcement of what was happening, you know, the press conference with people who cover the LPGA to talk about it, from when she got on the phone with me or Zoom with me about 1:45 in the afternoon Eastern, she was just nonstop talking to people. I'm sure she was getting tons of text messages and support from friends and peers and family and fans and just lots going on. And still, she took 15 minutes out of her day to talk to me. And so I think that's pretty cool. It's worth putting into perspective that on one of the biggest days of her life, Cheyenne Knight took some time to talk to some dude on the internet she's never met. So thank you to her for doing this in advance of playing it for you. I already thanked her yesterday. But conversation is really interesting, I think, given all of that context, I think, helps kind of describe what's going on in her brain and what she's probably thinking about right now as she's getting ready to go embark on this journey in a few weeks to Spain for the U.S. Solheim Cup team. So here's our interview with Cheyenne Knight. Cheyenne Knight joins us. She is one of the newest members of the U.S. Solheim Cup team. They're heading over to Spain in just a few weeks' time to take over on the Europeans, who are captained this time around by Suzanne Pedersen. Cheyenne, thanks for being with us. What has this day been like for you, and when did you find out you were going to be on this team?
Yeah, this day's been kind of hectic. I did find out yesterday, so I think a lot of the emotion was yesterday. After the round, I was just so excited. Just a dream come true, something that I've watched the Solheim Cup since I started playing golf when I was 9. So definitely a lifelong goal achieved. And so today's been pretty hectic with just like some media stuff, but got to like, still soaking it in. But yesterday after the round, really got to just like tell my close family and just everyone kind of about just what happened.
How did the news get delivered to you? Is it a phone call, text message, Zoom call? I mean, how does it all work?
So after my round yesterday, Stacy was like, hey, come in this room and we need to talk. So it was kind of a serious thing. And then once I like got in there, there were some cameras and knew it was a good conversation. So I was really happy.
I mean, after you, the immediate news, like, what is the process of what happens? Do you get outfitted for stuff? Do you start taking pictures of things? I mean, what's the kind of stuff that you maybe don't think about when you make a team like this that has to happen?
Yeah. So, in April we started doing like, outfit fittings, and then you did more pictures and stuff come June and the final fittings there, just trying on all the clothes. So that's back in June, and you still know you have like some time to go before the team is finalized. But then this week we actually did all our team photos. And so it starts to get more real, and you're not sure if you're on the team or not. So all kind of that stuff is weeks in advance. And so this week it definitely felt more real, just taking all the photos and stuff like that. But yeah, no, now it's just like planning your travel. And I booked my flight this morning to Spain and making sure my caddy and my family are ready to get there. And so more just like logistics now, but all the fittings and everything is all finalized.
Knowing that you had been included in all this process for these last several months, but still not necessarily knowing till the very end whether you're on it, how did that affect you at all in terms of inside the ropes or just personally speaking, knowing you were somewhere in there that could accomplish a really cool goal?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, it's not really on your mind a lot. But once you start doing the fittings and you kind of know where you are, where you're at in the standings, then it gets a little bit more real. And I've had some chats with Stacy and kind of Angela and the assistant captain just about where I'm at. And so it's been, I think this week was a little bit more stressful just because you knew it was like the last event before like the team was finalized. But I felt pretty good about it. I think I've played solid the last 2 years, but it has definitely been more in your face the last few weeks, just as like it's like crunch time down to the nitty gritty. But yeah, so it's been not like something I think about like too much or thought about too much on the course, because I know if you play well, then it takes care of itself and all you can control is yourself. So it's been I felt like I think the most stressed I felt was this week. Just it's just in your face a lot more.
Does the conversation pick up among you and your peers on the range inside the road? I mean, how does that kind of go in that last week or even month leading up to something like this?
Right. No, I think we just kind of like talk how we normally do, but this week I sat with Allie at breakfast one day, and one of our friends, Ng, was like, "Are you guys both on the team?" We're like, "Oh, we hope so, but we're not like totally sure yet." She's like, "Wow, and you guys are sitting next to each other." But me and Allie are friends, so I think it's kind of just we're kind of in the same boat. We're like, we hope we get a pick, or hope we play well enough this week to maybe not need a pick and make it off of points. But we're kind of like all in it together, and yeah, just it's not a super hostile environment.
As Stacey said earlier, I think on Golf Channel today, this team is relatively young and relatively new in some ways to the Solheim Cup. Is she framed that as a positive? And I think that can be. How do you frame it? And how do you frame having a team that, with five rookies on the squad?
Yeah, five rookies. I think it is a different team than they've had in years past, just with how many new people. But we have a lot of girls who have won a tournament and won recently. I mean, like off the top of my head, like Allison and Lilia, who have won three of the majors combined this year. So we have a really like good team, and I think a lot of good personalities that fit well together. And I think the culture is going to be great. I think girls are really excited to play and like are motivated and driven to kind of like upset Team Europe. And I think everyone is just so excited. And I think like this year is Solheim Cup, but then also next year. So I think just kind of like just building on this team, and maybe we'll have some new people next year. But I'm just really get the chemistry good this year. I think that's one thing we're already talking about, is just making sure we're gelling and getting to know each other a little bit better, and like off the course stuff. So should be good.
You brought something I want to ask about because there is a Solheim Cup next year in our neck of the woods here in the DC area. So is this year, I mean, obviously you want to win, but you're thinking about a 2-year cycle here, perhaps, where if everything kind of goes right, you guys just kind of do this again back to back.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what kind of we're looking at, like this year, and Spain's first. But we're just trying to, I think Stacy, she's a captain for next year too, so just kind of create a winning formula and see what how people play with each other, and kind of what teams like what partnerships work, and kind of just like and just kind of like get a good momentum, good trend, and take that into next year as well.
You've already won in the team environment this year. You won the Dallop in Michigan with Elizabeth Zokel. Do you kind of know what you want or need in a partner in either of these formats?
Yeah, I think I mean, I think I know, but I think Stacy knows best with all the KPMG insights and all the stats. I think she's got it figured out to a T. And whenever she's talked about someone that I might play with, it's kind of like who I think. Someone that has a little bit of a different game than mine, that might hit a little bit further off the tee. That's kind of what worked for me and Elizabeth at Dow. But I think like someone that, like in Dow, it wasn't match play, it was just straight stroke play, but like just a different format. But I think I can really play with anyone. I think that's one of my strengths, is I'm a pretty like easygoing person, and I think I have a game that can kind of fit with anyone. I don't hit super far, but I'm pretty consistent, fairways and greens, and a good putter. So yeah, and I think kind of like the people I've heard about that I might match up with, that's kind of like who in my mind I think I would match up with well. So we'll see, but play some practice rounds and we'll see.
Do you know anything about Finca Cortesine? Have you ever seen it over video or played it in person or anything like that?
Never been there, never been to Spain. This will be my first time. I've just heard about the course from Stacy. It's tight, it's hilly. The greens are kind of undulated, and it kind of gets windy in the afternoon. So just see. And but she said that the course fits my game pretty well. Just have to hit it pretty straight off the tee. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, and hopefully playing well.
Kind of sounds like, I mean, not maybe not green side, but kind of like old American in terms of where you kind of have to place it, and there's a lot of maybe
Yes.
penalty in the way where you've had success.
Yes. Yeah. Placement golf for sure. And I think kind of breaking up the greens into quadrants, which is what you have to do at Old American and just some other courses, knowing where to miss it, because I've heard that at the golf course in Spain that if you kind of miss it in the wrong area, you're going to have a really hard putt. So just very much placement golf.
What was the conversation like with your friends and family when you told them?
Yeah, they were so excited. I was pretty excited, but they definitely matched my level of excitement. And yeah, my parents and my aunt are going to go over there, and I think they're already shopping online for their Team USA gear and getting the USA flags ready to go and the face paint. So, I mean, they're so excited, and they're with me every step of the journey. Definitely, they're part of the team, kind of see what I go through week in and week out, just like during the season and the work I put in. So to share it with them, because I mean they make a lot of sacrifices for me as well. So to just share this moment together is amazing.
And how about you? Are you going to be face painted up, or are you a little bit more muted in how you want to represent the United States? Where do you kind of come down on that?
I'll get some face paint for sure. I'll get the nails painted. I mean, there's gonna be a lot of Europe, Team Europe over there, so got the right plan.
Thanks so much for being on with us. I really, really appreciate it. Congratulations on everything. Hopefully, it's a great celebration that you've had so far. Maybe a little bit more this week, and we'll see you in Spain.
Thanks so much. Nice to meet you.
Thanks to Cheyenne for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Again, she took time out of a really crazy day to hop on an iPad that wasn't hers and talk to me on Zoom, and was great. All the success in the world, hopefully. Looking forward to getting over to Spain and covering the Solheim Cup in person. Be my first Solheim Cup ever, so it'll be on foreign soil. It's also going to be back here next year in the DC area at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Northern Virginia. So it'll be kind of like a home game for me. I'm very, very excited about that. We haven't had that before, but we will have that in 2024. And again, when the Ryder Cup comes here in, what's it, 2037 now at Congressional. So some cool opportunities in the next decade and a half to have some really neat team golf here. And I'm looking forward to that. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thank you so much for your time. Next time we talk to you, I'm probably going to be in Ireland. We're going to do a show from over there and kind of go over some of our adventures, and there'll be a recap of the Ireland experience. But we'll talk a little bit about what happens in the Walker Cup. We'll talk a little bit about what happens in the professional golf events of the week. I'm sure we'll find some other story. We'll probably talk a little bit of Ryder Cup too. Lots still going here in the next couple of months, even though the PGA Tour season, as the FedEx Cup constructed, is now done. But we've got the fall to figure out between the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, LPGA Tour, Korn Ferry Tour. So much to consider here in the next couple of months. If you catch us on a podcast platform, let you do so. Please leave us a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. Tell a friend about our show. We've been doing this thing for 20 years, and we're still finding new people listening to it. So that's really exciting and gratifying. And if you have any questions or just want to talk, I'm on X/Twitter. Threads and Instagram at Ryan Ballingy. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Happy to talk to you about golf or really anything about life. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks again for being a part of the show. We will talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.